You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Well, hey there, everybody. It's me, Joe Thrashenkill. You're listening to the Toilet of Hell radio show. Hey, with me, I'm joined by the number one good and golden boy, the internet sweetheart. Give it up, everybody, for Jordan. Jordan, how you doing?
Doing okay. Sorry if my voice is sounding a little haggard. I was doing some brutal death metal vox yesterday, and it usually takes me about a day to fully recover, so no King Diamond high falsetto on this show for me.
So what is your setup? How do you get prepared to bring the gutturals?
I do actually do warm-ups on my way to going to do them. Some Zen of Screaming, that sort of stuff. Just breathing, warming up. And personally, I like to warm up to Misfits singing. It's in my range, and it can give a little bit of variety to get me going. And then I make sure to lubricate with a nice big bottle of Chucky milk.
Seriously?
Yeah, so I get phlegmy.
Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, it's bananas are good for that as well. Chocolate milk. I know other people try to do some other things, but that tends to work for me.
Oh, man, that's crazy. I'm realizing now in my old age that I am no longer as tolerant of lactose.
Oh, no.
It's like eating ice cream or drinking a chalky milk. Like, that's, it'll taste good. It's just going to give me a very bad time.
I mean, there's lactate now. I'm sure there's something that's tolerable for your tummy and your taste buds.
Yeah, I just that's so funny to me. Drinking the chalky milk to get in the zone for the brutes. So did you get like the Zen of Screaming DVD set back in the day?
No, it's on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
I haven't gone through the whole thing, but it's mostly to learn some breathing techniques, and you make kind of funny sounds as you're driving in your car just to wake your vocals up and stretch them and be ready to go.
I like making funny noises in my car, but I gotta watch these videos so I learn how to do it the right way.
Yeah, you don't want to hurt yourself. I mean, you can actually like paralyze your vocal cords. It's happened to vocalists. I know like Jesse Leach it happened to, just because he would go out there and just go and have no technique, and that's how you hurt yourself. It's how you get sore throats all the time, and sometimes you even need surgery to fix it.
Who was the DSBM band that had the absurd photos of somebody all like bandaged up in a mental hospital or whatever? They claimed that their vocalist destroyed his throat making that record. Was that like Flaherty or something?
We covered this on our like conspiracy theory wild stories. It's the guy with pig hands.
Yeah. The vocals sound bad enough.
Silencer,
that's right, yeah. The vocals sound bad enough, I believe he did destroy his voice doing that.
Yeah, it can easily happen. That's why bands should probably rely more on studio tricks. Do the Burton C. Bell trick. Get it done once correctly, and then just let the computer do everything else.
I've heard from like producers that work in mainstream music that with pop or country music or things like that, they do one take and then we're going to fix it. You get the fuck out of my way.
And that's why when there's live performances on like Saturday Night Live or the Super Bowl or wherever, people always comment about how this sounds so bad, or you can clearly hear the backing tracks. It's like, yeah, because they can't do it night in, night out, and being pitch perfect and hitting everything correctly. They need all the help they can get, and especially in the studio when you've got potentially millions of dollars backing you to make sure that it sounds perfect.
That actually leads me to something that I wanted to talk about on this week's show. A former bandmate of mine years and years ago, he posted yesterday that he was at Lollapalooza.
Oh, good for him and 10,000 other people.
Yeah, that's part of what we'll talk about. But He posted that what really got him was that he was estimating, like, I think about 90% of the acts that I've seen at the festival this year are using backing tracks. And like, as a musician, like, this guy's like a real ass musician. That's been his real paying job for years, where he does whatever you need, whatever night of the week you need music, and that's how he pays his rent. So he found that pretty offensive, but I think that that's also just like, that is how this stage of pop, rock, whatever, that is what it is now. Like, it's there's much less of a premium being paid to live skill. It's just like, well, this is a band that gets in the studio, does one take, the producers fix everything, and then we get out on the road immediately with backing tracks. We're going to do this as quickly and as cheaply as possible.
That's, are you entertained or not? And if you are, well, that's good enough. I think everyone should find themselves a serious, legitimate musician friend or someone who really knows recording or sound, because they can point all these things out where, like, your average person might listen to something and be like, oh, that just sounds kind of weird. They can be like, that is a backing track. They're using reverb on this. They're doing this. If you watch the sound guy, he's queuing things up. It really opens your eyes to the live music experience, especially outside of rock bands and metal bands and instrumental live performances, where it's just kind of people bopping around and pantomiming to pop music.
Absolutely. And what your suggestion is, making a friend with a real musician is great advice. If you like music, they can kind of demystify all of this shit for you a little bit and kind of change the way that you think about the sound waves you're hearing. But that being said, let's talk a little bit about Lollapalooza.
And those, just seeing live pictures from Lollapalooza, not just at the venue, but I saw someone tweeted out the, like, local public transportation, I guess subway or elevated trains in the area, just packed with people. Like, I wouldn't be happy there even if there wasn't a pandemic. And this is just mostly people unmasked, some people with masks under their chin, which just take it off at that point.
It's
going to be an epicenter.
That was the most frustrating thing for the last year and a half for me. Like, it's around your ears and not around any of the parts that are, like, expelling fucking particulate on me, please.
Under the nose, or when people pull it down so they can speak more clearly.
I quit going to the corner store next to me because one of the guys that worked there, like, he... it's a really narrow fucking corner store, and, like, he's always on his phone, and he has to move his mask below his chin to talk on the phone.
They can still hear you through the little piece of fabric.
He's like, I'm not fucking with this. I'm going to the other corner store, thank you. The one that has slightly wider aisles. I've seen some pictures. I've seen some footage from Lollapalooza. I gotta say, this seems like it was probably a pretty bad idea to, like, let this happen, but I understand that there are a lot of moneyed interests involved in this shit, you know?
Moneyed interest and, you know, no real repercussions for when people inevitably do get sick from this. It's just, well, you bought the ticket that said we're not liable, so we're getting off scot-free. It's like schools that have the permission slips. Well, I'm sorry little Timmy got crushed by the dinosaur bones, but you sign this, we're fine.
I did enjoy seeing the footage of hundreds of people just jumping the fucking fence with security, like, trying their best to apprehend one or two people. Like, I support that. I think that's great. If you're going to have this stupid event in the middle of Chicago, people should absolutely bust their way through into it.
I don't even know who was on Lollapalooza this year, other than, like, wasn't Limp Bizkit on it?
I don't think Limp Bizkit was playing this year. There are some, I've got the lineup in front of me, and there's some baffling things here, if you're interested.
Oh no, they were on Lollapalooza because there's a bunch of stories about how Fred Durst looks totally different now because he has hair and a mustache.
Oh my god, you're absolutely right, because I even saw this morning there was footage of Limp Bizkit performing yesterday, one of the headliners for Saturday. He asked the crowd, how many of y'all are vaccinated? And there was like a big woo. He's like, that's good. That's responsible of you.
Well, Fred Durst is 50 years old. He is dad material at this point.
I just like how he has kind of completely changed his persona from the bad boy of the late 90s to this guy that everybody kind of likes now.
Time makes fools of us all, and I think also calms us down a lot.
Definitely. So anyway, I thought that was kind of charming. Like, good, that's responsible.
As you scream at me with no masks on.
Yeah. Is it okay if we like look at some of the highlights from this lineup, because it's something else, I guess.
Yeah, let's go through it.
Thursday, let's look at the headlining the top row for Thursday. Number one, you got Miley Cyrus, right? Like, that makes sense.
Classic rock artist, Miley Cyrus, yes.
Everybody knows Miley Cyrus. That's somebody that would be on top billing. After that, you've got Illenium. Do you know who Illenium
is? Is that like the Willenium? I know that.
I thought it would be like a tribute to Nas, like Illmatic.
Is it a band?
I have no fucking idea, man.
Looking at all these massive festivals, I tend to count on my hands like how many people I know, and it's always like less than five.
I mean, yeah, every year festival season rolls around, like, unless you're looking at Rocklahoma, which will never ever change. And you know, your aging brain is just like, I find this comforting.
Yes, good. I'm so happy that Nikki Sixx is still around.
Exactly. Like, oh, good. I was really wanting to see Buck Cherry again this year. It becomes like, you know, it's a mockery of like, I used to be with it, and now what's with it is weird and scary to me. The next person on the lineup here on the top line for Thursday, K Tranada. Anything?
Okay.
I don't know what that is. I don't know.
I don't know either.
And then Playboi Carti, who I am familiar with. So
that name I am familiar with.
Yes. The second line, there are some things that, you know, us aging millennials are a little bit more familiar with. For example, Jimmy Eat World.
Sure. Acceptable.
All time.
Fitting for Lollapalooza. That
absolutely
fits.
And you won't catch me saying anything bad about Jimmy Eat World. Bleed American record is still like pretty close to a perfect like pop record in my mind. All Time Low, a band that's been around for forever. I don't know if I've ever heard a song that they did.
I've never heard a song, but I remember one of their press photos was them in tighty whitey underwear.
And then, of course, the scion of the Benihana fortune. I'm talking, of course, Steve Aoki.
Is he really?
He is, yes.
Well, good for him.
I think his dad was actually also involved in like some pretty bizarre mobbed up money laundering shit.
That's usually hand in hand with becoming CEOs and billionaire scions.
Yeah, so Steve Aoki has led maybe the most charmed life I can imagine, like getting all this money on a silver platter and using it to build a career where all you do is party and do drugs.
And occasionally you like show up in Apple commercials, and you know, I don't really think I've ever listened to anything he's done other than like maybe a remix of a metal song. But I do know he put out Atari Teenage Riot's album like on his own record label. So that's cool to me. Respect for that.
Again, yes. Thank you for using your dad's filthy sushi money
to put it out like anarchist, far left, aggressive, techno hardcore.
Yes, exactly. Moving on a bit, we've got the top billing for Friday, Tyler, the Creator. Not really my thing, but well established. Then you got Marshmallow, which might be the most famous artist I can think of among like Gen Z, especially in like Latin America. Like, Marshmallow is fucking huge in Mexico. I've never heard a note of what he's done. I always thought he was kind of like a ripoff of Deadmau5.
He does the mask gimmick and does dance music or electronic music. So
yeah. But it, like, if you go to like a market in Mexico, most of the shit that you'll see for sale, like for kids, is like either branded with Fortnite or with Marshmallow.
They should probably work together, unless they already have, I think, actually.
They definitely have. And then you got Roddy Rich.
Let's get all of our brands together and just have one thing, and it can all be owned by Disney.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Do you know who Roddy Rich is?
Nope.
No, I don't know either. And then you got
isn't he the announcer for The Price is Right?
that's Roddy.
Roddy.
What is it?
Rod Roddy.
I think he died like a while back, man.
Yeah, they have a different announcer now.
And then Jack Harlow, who is somebody I've only become familiar with over the last couple of days. Apparently, he's a big deal.
Sounds like a romance novelist.
It does, doesn't it?
So the new passionate tale from Jack Harlow.
So Thursday and Friday, they're whatever. Saturday and Sunday are really what I want to bring the focus here to, though. The top billing for Saturday. Here we go. We got nothing but bangers. We got Post Malone.
Okay, heard of him.
The guy from the suburbs of Dallas who decided to cover his face in tattoos and make just the most unbearable music. which is, that makes sense. He's big with the kids. People love Post Malone. People my age love Post Malone. I don't get it, but they love him. And then here's one that really gets me going. Journey.
Hmm.
You know, like the Don't Stop Believin' band?
Oh, yeah. No, I know who Journey is.
The
Wheel
guy
in the sky keeps on turning.
Yeah. The keyboardist in the band is married to the faith advisor for the Trump administration.
Fun.
Real weird shit. Then you got Megan Thee Stallion, who everyone loves, and that makes sense to be up there. And then Limp Bizkit.
Journey really is the odd band out in that.
Seriously, like it could be Limp Bizkit was the odd man out. No, it's definitely Journey.
You know, that's something for the parents who brought their teenagers.
I who was asking for Journey on this?
Maybe Perry Farrell owed him a favor or something.
You just reminded me. This is a story I heard about one of the very first Lollapaloozas back in the 90s. You know who Wesley Willis is, right?
I whooped Batman's ass. Yes.
Suck a cheetah's dick. So Wesley Willis is, of course, Chicago royalty. Outside of, I believe it was the first Lollapalooza, he was handing out CDs for free to people that were coming by. Perry Farrell of Jane's Addiction Porno for Pyros came by and started to grab a CD. Wesley Willis said, "No, sir, for you, Mr. Farrell, it's going to be $10.
He can afford it then.
Again, huge loss. What a treasure, Wesley Willis. Let's go ahead to today, Sunday, the headliners, Modest Mouse, sure, whatever,
okay.
Brockhampton, whatever that is.
Is that a pro wrestler?
It sounds like it, right? Young Thug, and, the headliner of headliners for Sunday, the old Foo Fighters.
Well, that's nice.
So if you want to go back to our bonus show we put out just a couple of days ago, we've got some fun stories about the Foo Fighters on that one. We won't get into it on this, though. We did a lot of time on that.
And just as a reminder, especially for younger listeners who never really experienced Lollapalooza, I saw it when it came back and it had like Queens of the Stone Age and Boy Sets Fire on and Jurassic 5. The very first lineup for Lollapalooza in 1991 was Jane's Addiction. It's Perry Farrell's fest, so that's fine. It was their farewell tour. Susie and the Banshees, Living Color, Nine Inch Nails, Ice-T and Body Count, Butthole Surfers, Rollins Band, Violent Femmes, Fishbone.
Man, that is, if you were to like pick a bunch of names out of a hat to make the most 90s lineup, that's it. You did it.
And, you know, there's no really small bands on that. It's just, as the kids would say, all bangers.
Yeah, all killer, no filler. Can you imagine how many bucket hats were in attendance at that fest?
This is 1991, so I don't even think bucket hats were really in until, like, what, 95, maybe? Oh, 94? Sure.
Yeah, maybe you might be right.
I'll go 95's list is in front of me. Sonic Youth, Hole, Cypress Hill, Pavement, Elastica, Beck, Jesus Lizard, Mighty Mighty Bosstones, on the side stage, Coolio, Yola Tango. Yeah, there were bucket hats at this.
See, that particular lineup you're talking about, I feel, is very much the Hullabalooza Fest.
It's getting to that point where it's just getting bigger and bigger and adding in more different genres that still kind of fit and are acceptable to varying audiences.
So, I mean, this whole thing going on, it's dumb and irresponsible. I mean, it's good that people are, I guess, having fun seeing live music again. Some of these bands need to get paid. Some, like Steve Aoki, could probably take another season off.
I mean, Foo Fighters were just playing, like, MSG. They're fine.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, there are a lot of younger bands on here that definitely need money. The moralizing about this, I don't think is going to work, because the cat's out of the barn, so to speak. That saying we all know and love, like, it's just it's over. Like, you can't contain anything anymore.
Yeah, it's at this point, there's festivals and tours going on, and it's ultimately up to you to decide if you want to take the risk and go see something. And, you know, I can understand a band you love, you've never seen before. This is their reunion tour. They broke up 10 years ago. You know, I get it. There's a show in February where, like, that's the case for me. And I'm hoping things ease up by then. If they don't, it's, like, going to be a game time decision. And if I go, I'll probably be in the back with a mask on.
Yeah. And by that time, you might have had one or two or three booster shots as well.
I hope so. Give me a couple. Fill me to the brim. Make it pour out my ears.
Fill me up with vaccine.
To the top.
I want to feel it hitting the back of my teeth, so to speak. We don't know what to
rearrange my guts with vaccine. So are you happy?
If you press my belly button, vaccine spills out my ears. Again, you know, try to judge your own level of risk and be safe as you can, and do your best. I'm going to go see The Green Knight this afternoon, because the theater near me that generally only shows like Marvel movies or Disney movies somehow got suckered into carrying this one. And looking at their online ticketing system, literally no one wants to see it today.
Oh, that's the best time. And then you get the seat, like, all the way in the corner, and hopefully no one comes anywhere near you.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't know why this venue decided to carry this movie, and they're going to take a huge bath on it, but that's to my benefit.
Yeah. I guess they got done showing Black Widow, so now it's, well, we got to fill up a weekend.
Yep, and again, this will not be here next weekend.
Well, hope it's good. I've seen people talk about how much they love it, and one or two people saying how much they hated it, so curious to see what you think about it, because I know nothing about it. I think I've seen one still picture from it and went, oh, that's the guy from Slumdog Millionaire.
Did you ever, like, for English class and junior high or whatever, read Sir Gawain and the Good Green Knight?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Never even heard of it, to be honest.
That was one of the ones that we covered when I was in junior high, and it was a pretty cool story. And I'm a big, you know, fucking mark for all of the A24 stuff. Like, I see the logo, I get the Pavlovian response, like, I do the soy face immediately.
And I do the face where I go, everyone's gonna love this, I'm gonna eventually see it, and I'm gonna say, it's okay.
Exactly, yeah. The way that, you know, you feel about, I don't know, Hereditary or Midsummer or...
I've actually never seen those, and I will eventually.
You saw Uncut Gems, right?
Yes.
And you thought it was just okay, right?
I think it had its moments, because I also saw, Good Time.
Yeah.
And it was almost the same kind of feeling where, like, I really like the beginning. You're starting to lose me a little bit, and then it's over.
Good Time made me really sad. Like, that was a tough one for me for some reason. I really
liked the beginning of that one, and then it just kind of, the story petered out and wasn't great.
But anyway, so, you know, it's one of those things. This is for the moment an independent distributor. I think they're getting picked up by probably Disney soon.
Probably, and they'll make a cartoon version and maybe some vinyl pop figures.
Yeah, I can't wait to get a Funko of Howard Ratner. anyway, I just wanted to go through this a bit. While we're on kind of a mainstream kick, as it were, just a quick detour here that I don't want to focus on at all.
On this heavy metal podcast.
On this heavy metal podcast. But I heard this morning, and I feel like I have to share it with y'all, that I think one of the complaints that I and that a lot of other people have about pop music is it's really homogenous, you know? Like, there are only so many keys that artists use. There are only so many chord progressions that artists use. It's very disposable in a way. Like, there are very few things that make it defining for any one particular artist. So when I heard this, I was like, okay, finally, pop music is really making some big jumps here, and that this is the first instance of microtonal pop music I can say I've ever heard.
So explain what microtonal is exactly.
So if you have a guitar, right? You know what a guitar looks like, right?
I'm pretty sure. I can see it in my mind's eye.
You know, you got those little metal chunks on the fretboard that separate your frets. You know where you're looking at? Like,
yep, metal chunks. Got it.
Yeah. So if you put your finger above one, it's like, well, that's an A. And if you put it on the other one, that's a whatever comes after an A. You know, I'm not a mathematician here. The idea with microtonal music is that you remove those frets and you're able to basically get at the notes between the notes that traditionally define Western music. Western music is pretty firmly established with these are the notes and the scales that we use. And then with, say, Eastern music, it's different, where you have different scales, modes, different notes used, where you don't have... You don't necessarily have to use a fretted instrument. You can get the note between the note, as it were.
So it's jazz. You have to listen to the notes that aren't there.
No, they are there. You can definitely hear them there. If you listen to there are a lot of instances you can use. I think the most prominent one that I can think of for Western music is the Radiohead song called Idiotech. If you try to recreate the main notes that carry through that song, you won't be able to do it on a keyboard or a guitar, because they were programmed to be those in-between notes. But that's enough nerd shit for now, right?
Yes. Absolutely enough nerd shit.
So let's give a quick listen. This is really... really something else, and we'll keep it brief for you just because I wanted to share this with you. This is Red Dress by Sarah Brand. Here we go. 'Cause what they saw, see me in a red dress, hopping on the devil fast, thinking of lust as they judge and discuss. What are you doing here? All right, what do you think?
That was really unpleasant to listen to in a way that I can't really verbalize.
Yeah, I think maybe to our Western ears that that's the thing. We're not accustomed to these notes, so it, you know, might be a little bit ahead of her time, but you know, maybe our kids will get into it.
It sounds like bad Jewel almost, like someone doing a bad impression that can't really sing, but it's ultra clear, so it pierces your brain.
I don't know how this happened. Like, there had to be some kind of huge fuck up, like transposing these notes from MIDI to whatever output she had while she was singing. Like, this was definitely, I could be wrong here, maybe this was intentional, but I don't think it was.
Are there metal bands that do this? And I've just ignored them or avoided them?
I think probably the most prominent microtonal metal band I can think of is Jute Geit.
Okay, I know the name because we've covered them on the website, but not 100% familiar. Even microtonal in general, I think my knowledge is boiled down to some lady posting a video on Twitter playing guitar and saying it's microtonal.
That lady rules. Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. She puts on like a 50s style getup and just goes to town. It rules. I wish I could.
Like, it's one of those things where like you're using that word and you're playing guitar and like I'm not getting the differences all that much, but it's probably just because I'm not listening that closely.
But again, you don't have to do that. All you have to do is drink the chalky milk and go brrr.
Yeah, it's cut out the middleman. I don't have to learn an instrument. I already have a voice. I can shred it all on my own for the enjoyment of the three people that will do a name your price purchase on it.
And that's it. That's how you've picked the right way to do music.
Make sure to check out my stuff on Maggot Stomp in 6 months.
There we go. Now that we've gotten all of this mainstream stuff out of the way, right? We can get down to the real nitty gritty, the real nerd shit, right?
Yeah, and do you want to get rid of the sad stuff out of the way first?
I guess it's probably appropriate that we should bring up some of the pretty big things that happened this week.
Three major deaths, all like within a couple of days of each other, and all of them a bummer.
Yeah.
You have Mike Howe from Metal Church, you have Dusty Hill from ZZ Top, and Joey Jordison, formerly of Slipknot.
Yeah, that's every one of them like happening within a day of each other too. Just like goddamn, like it really kind of hammers home like just kind of how fragile the lives of musicians are, especially people that have been in this industry for a long time.
Yeah, and I mean they always say it comes in threes, and it literally came in threes.
It's tough. I was reading about Mike Howe. I saw that his bandmates in Metal Church had said that essentially his life ended due to the incredibly fucked up American medical healthcare system, which is a story that is sadly very, very familiar. We talked about it very recently.
Yeah, it's... For those that don't know, Mike Howe committed suicide, and the surviving members of Metal Church had released a statement in response to TMZ's reporting on it, and they said, "If you knew Mike Howe, then you knew he was a truly good human being who loved his friends, his family, and his many fans around the world. He would always go the extra mile to make someone feel good, and he would always give you the shirt off his back when needed it. We ask that you remember Mike in that way and for the amazing metal music he created. As to what really happened, he was victimized by a failing healthcare system and subsequently poisoned by the venom of Big Pharma. In short and in essence, he fell prey to the real, quote, fake healer. Enough said. Hashtag truth. Godspeed, Mike Howe. We love you." And this never occurred to me, but apparently some fans had seen the message and interpreted it in a way that, like I said, wouldn't cross my mind at all. And they thought it was like an anti-vax message. So Metal Church had to, I think they might have deleted the original message and then responded again, saying, quote, "Concerning our recently deleted post addressing the news that Mike's passing was a suicide, we wanted to dispel any misconceptions that might have arisen from certain media reports. In our efforts to do that, our attempts at honesty created narrative that fell outside of our purest of intentions. We were in no way, shape, or form referring to anything in relation to vaccinations, COVID, or politics. We are saying our brother was hurting, and while he was seeking medical care for it, the treatments he was utilizing did not protect him. Otherwise, he would still be with us today. So that's really annoying that they had to further clarify what they were saying, but I'm glad they didn't take it back. You know, it's they're still standing by what they said, but I guess everyone's brain is geared towards COVID right now and vaccination, so...
Maybe this is just, you know, the way my brain is fixated all the time, but when I hear something like that, I immediately think of how incredibly fucked, like, opioids have destroyed so many people across the country, and, like, the proliferation of them, like, flooding the market with them and then immediately taking them away, making them impossible to get, and making people rely on other means to try to feel better after they've been just completely filled with this shit. It's just, it has caused more deaths than we'll ever be able to count.
Yeah, and the people that run these companies get small fines and slaps on the wrist, and they say the company is dissolving, and then they just open another one under a different name.
Yeah, or in the case of the Sacklers, you can declare bankruptcy and move all the money around, and nobody gets anything. Actually, I take that back. Your name gets stripped off one of your art museums on the Capitol Mall, and people will pretend that they don't know you in public for all of 2 weeks.
And then they'll start donating to all your campaigns and whatever else you're working on.
Yep.
Like, remember when businesses were just like, well, we're not going to donate to Republicans after the insurrection. They waited a month and now they're back at it.
Yep. I got those nice PR press releases, the hashtag resistance said, and now I'm going to buy all of my, going to buy all of my healthcare needs from United Healthcare or whatever.
They really care. They said a nice press release.
Exactly. So yeah, that's that is depressing that people were trying to take that as something completely the other way. I guess I didn't notice this until you kind of pointed it out, but all of this reporting around his suicide was put out by TMZ of all people. I've never once in my life been into, I guess, celebrity culture. I've never read TMZ or Perez Hilton or any of that shit. I've always thought it was beneath me. So it was very odd to me to see that this was something that would be covered by TMZ, that these guys would report it before anybody else.
Yeah, it's kind of forget about it now, but before TMZ, the place where a lot of these things would show up is like the National Enquirer and these other rags that you'd see while waiting in line at the supermarket that would post these salacious things and pictures and all that sort of stuff. But I think with TMZ, now that it's more modern and has a TV show and strong internet presence and pays a lot of these paparazzi and stringers to like go hang out at airports and harass people, and sometimes they even have deals. Like, I know for a long time they would put WWE wrestlers on their shows and websites, and they conveniently find Triple H outside of this building and he, you know, gives a big story. So a lot of these places have their hands within TMZ because it's can be positive press for them, but I suppose for anyone looking to make a quick buck, you could easily just email TMZ and they'll cover it.
From my understanding, they also have tendrils within police departments, medical examiners. Sure. That was how, like, pictures of Kobe Bryant after his death surfaced, and I believe there is a lawsuit still moving against TMZ for that. Where you have people that are, I guess, taking in an extra revenue stream by, you know, giving these sensitive pieces of data to TMZ, which is pretty depressing, I guess, to think about.
You mean I can make $2,000 if I act like a ghoul? Sold.
Yeah, which kind of leads us to the next sad piece that we learned about this week. Of course, I'm thinking about Joe Jordanson. I saw a bunch of people that I'm friends with online replying to TMZ saying things that I think might have gotten them a suspension for a couple of days.
Well, this story cropped up for me because Freddie Leclerc, who used to be in Dragon Force and was in Cincinnium, Joey Jordanson's newer side band, had talked about how TMZ had released the 911 call for Joey's passing. And it's just, you don't need that. No one needs to hear that, especially, a day after it happened? Just really just getting those clicks, I suppose. That's all it comes down to for this evil human being that runs it.
I mean, it's an evil human being that runs it, but there are, how many people, evil people, that are completely complicit allowing it to happen? I don't know what news, what service this allows to have people listen to an extremely distressed phone call of someone that's lost somebody that they really care about. I don't know how that is newsworthy, I guess. But again, I guess the U.S. does have fairly broad laws with what can be reported, which is good in some ways, and in this way, it's very ghoulish.
Yeah, this stuff I know can be acquired through Freedom of Information Act requests, which don't always have to be given or acknowledged. But I also think when it comes to 911 calls, it could be argued that it's within the public interest and it's public records, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I could find out if you voted in the last election. It won't tell me who you voted for, but I am able to see that you can. And that's one of those public record weird things that is just out there and you never think about. So I don't know if this kind of falls into that sort of similar situation, but it's just the whole thing is gross, and it takes a village to do all this awful stuff. And it's just really sad. And unfortunately, with Joy's death, it is shocking, but unfortunately not entirely surprising, knowing that what we know about him getting kicked out of Slipknot and subsequent years of struggling. So, oops. I don't know. It's just, you try to think about the good stuff, and just seeing the outpouring of love and support and people, which I agree with, saying how he was a great drummer and really elevated not just Slipknot, but metal at that time with his playing.
It is very difficult to argue that, given where we were in the late 90s with mainstream metal, that Slipknot did not totally elevate the genre, brought in elements that were completely foreign to a bunch of kids and, proceeded to make them go in all kinds of directions that they would not have gone before.
You could hear blast beats on the radio and MTV because of his drumming.
Absolutely. Nobody was in mainstream metal doing anything similar.
At the same time, you had Crazy Town doing Butterfly. So there's the range of metal in the broadest terms for Crazy Town. And then this new band of 8 or 9 people in crazy get-ups doing extremely aggressive, heavy, fast songs and sharing the same airspace and sometimes even the same stage.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's you can't deny that I think that was a net positive for the genre in general, for taking it into places that it would not have gone, into your suburban bedroom.
And Slipknot wouldn't have achieved their success and their staying ability without Corey Taylor and his specific voice and his lyrics and the rapping at the time, eventually moving into clean, memorable choruses, and Joey's drumming. Nothing against any other members, but I think a lot of them were more easily replaceable than those two people. And
if you have
losing that, someone of that caliber, you could just see again in the responses how it has really affected a lot of people.
I mean, with the drummer is always the backbone of your group. If you don't have a decent drummer, your band's going to sound like shit. That is the case with 100% of bands. And with a band with that many members doing that many different things, again, you have one guy that's wrangling everybody with the rhythm. And it is, again, incredible that anybody was able to get that many people doing that much different shit, but in line.
While being strapped into a roller coaster with your drum set.
Absolutely. Wearing suffocating costumes when it's 150 degrees outside. So it is a tremendous loss. And unfortunately, like, people are fucking ghouls, man.
I mean, speaking of ghouls, just today we saw some no-name grindcore band put out just a tasteless shirt with their band name on it, a picture of Slipknot with targets over their faces, and underneath it said, two down, seven to go.
Yeah, man. This band, I think that they stripped this off of all of their socials. The band is called Deterioration. They formed in 2003. If you look at their metal archives, they have something like 10,000 releases.
Keep at it, guys. One of these is going to be a hit.
I guess what kills me is that the photo that they've got for their metal archives is these three dudes, you know, standing against a brick wall, that classic photo we all love, with the words behind them, beer, pizza, metal. And I think that that's a really unique take on the genre. I think that they're going to go places with it.
I guess they ran out of room to include herpes. Well, good luck being edgelords in a band you've been in for almost 20 years to little, very, 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 very little to no success. And cool, you pissed off a couple people on the internet.
Great job.
You did it.
And then, of course, there's Dusty Hill of ZZ Top, which if you don't like ZZ Top, I don't really know what to say.
You're not a sharp-dressed man.
I don't know. That's one of those. It's one of my dad's favorite bands. It's one of those things that I can always associate with. Like, this is one of the things that, like, I can share with the old man, right?
Yeah. I mean, people our age love ZZ Top too. So it's one of those cross-generational things where lots of people can get into it. If you didn't grow up with it, like, I mean, I didn't, but I know the hits. And I feel like ZZ Top is one of those bands where, like, if you come across someone that hates them, it's like, really? ZZ Top? You hate ZZ Top? Why?
Out of all the bands you could hate.
And it's not even like even a band like AC/DC where they get played ad nauseum everywhere you go, and you grow to dislike hearing Hell's Bells all the time. It doesn't happen as much with ZZ Top. So I don't know. Just one of those bands that's iconic look, iconic sound. Can't really think of any stories of them doing bad things or awful things. I know they're big professional wrestling fans. And if you look in like the 80s and 90s, occasionally you'll see them like in the front row of WWF events and Smoky Mountain Wrestling and things like that. So
again,
that's a bummer. And I feel bad for his relatives, Hank and Peggy and Bobby Hill.
Yeah. Again, you can't really harbor any resentment for a band that did a full episode of King of the Hill as Hank's extended family. It's
and they were in Back to the Future too.
That's right. Yes. I had completely forgotten that.
Back to the Future 3, I should say. Yes. Where they were the band playing in the Old West and did a music video for the song for the movie as well.
I had completely forgotten that. That is absolutely true.
The little violin part or fiddle part in it has been stuck in my brain for about 30 years. So I can never forget it.
So yeah, 1 week we lost three pretty pretty great dudes, not in the genre of hard rock and heavy metal. So that's not good. That's not an ideal week, man. That's a pretty bad one, I would say.
Yeah, it's a rough week, and I don't know. There's not much you could say. You can listen to the music that you grew up with and you liked. If the families have fundraisers or GoFundMes to deal with that, you can donate to it, or I don't know, pay a little bit of money, buy some of the songs, and you have it with you, and a little bit of it goes to their estate.
Yeah, it's not a bad call. Do that.
And go see bands when you can, because you never know when you're going to get the next chance, especially with the way things are going.
Fuck, that's true as well. Hopefully everybody will do outdoor sets for us for in the meantime.
I'm just going to get one of those, like, American Gladiators atmosphere bubbles and just roll to the venues in that and hermetically seal myself in.
You're going to get dudes with tennis ball bouncing guns trying to take you out.
Just bouncing around like a huge kickball.
So we got three different things we could do right here. I'm going to let you choose. We can do one that we've hammered on quite a bit. We can do a Texas specific one, or we can do just a fun one. Which one would you rather do?
We can cram in both, you think?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so here's a hobby horse that we've done for a while. Bad Wolves, right? That's a band that we've mentioned.
It's been, what, a week since we talked about them?
Yeah, man, like,
every time we say we're gonna stop, something else happens.
It's fascinating. It is a goddamn fiery train wreck, and I can't look away. All week, Moshoff has been sending me screenshots from Tommy Vex's Instagram.
We've got him on the Tommy Vex beat.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell him to stop doing this, because every time he sends me something, I'm like, what the fuck? I think the where we last left off, it was Tommy Vex is doing fitness expos in whining a lot. He's whining a whole lot. In the most recent fitness expo, he went off the dome in the middle of a song to let everybody in the audience know that when Bad Wolves recorded Zombie, the song that made them a household name within this blog, that none of the members of Bad Wolves actually performed on the song aside from Vex himself, which is very funny to me.
So conceivably he did this on his own with other people, and they bought him out, appropriated it.
I think what he was saying
is, it into band lore.
Yeah, I think what he was saying is that the whatever fucking money bags behind this band, making this a whatever industry creation that they are, the latest group of 40-year-old boy bands, that they hired, you know, studio musicians to play the drums and the guitar and the bass and whatever, and they just had Tommy Vex doing the vocals on top of that, which I think is incredibly funny to me, because everybody involved in this band has been in the industry for so fucking long, and I can't say that I think in my brain of Zombie as being a particularly challenging song.
That's why I'm thinking that this was done prior to the band's formation, and the manager and label head, Alan Kovac, who we'll get into him in a minute, probably said, okay, we have this song and it's going to do well, but no one really knows who you are. You need the backing of established, well-known musicians in your genre. Let's get Doc Coyle. Let's get all these other people to kind of give you the cred you need, because you've been kicked out of every other band you've been in, to like beef you up and make you seem like a real band and not just the Tommy Vex experience featuring some guys in the studio.
See, that makes a lot of sense now that you frame it that way. I had not considered it that way before.
You know, it's the Steely Dan of the metal world.
Well,
you have all these established quality musicians going into a studio and doing it, and then when you head out live, you have the backing of well-known people.
I guess, yeah. I think that might be a little bit of heresy to say that Bad Wolves are the Steely Dan of metal, but I appreciate
people that have been listening to the show know how I feel about Steely Dan, so that is not by mistake that I said that. just jabbing them a little bit in the ribs to make it hurt.
We'll allow it. Let's keep the show rolling. Okay, so in the time since then, I saw that there was a bit of back and forth. I saw Doc Coyle was being very humble online, saying that there's only one person that made the Bad Wolves what they are today, and that is, of course, Dolores O'Riordan, who died before she was supposed to do her vocal part on that particular song. Again, since then, there has been a lot of gibber-jowling, some back sass. What have you seen? What's the thread carrying this through?
The thread carrying this through, at least this week, is that Tommy Vext has filed a lawsuit against Bad Wolves manager and label head Alan Kovac, alleging that there's like this big conspiracy behind him getting kicked out of the band. And their name comes up again. TMZ has reported on this. The suit saying that this kind of goes back to Tommy Vext is protesting online and supporting the insurrection and just all the stupid shit we've been covering for the past year and a half from this guy. And Vex is saying like Kovac tried to stop him from making these statements, and also alleging racism is behind this.
I didn't think that we were allowed to use the race card though. Like that was what Tommy Vex said, that he, as a proud Republican, Trump supporter, anti-vaxxer, whatever the fuck, that he has never been a victim of racism in his life.
And ignoring the fact that not everyone in Bad Wolves is white.
Seems like an oversight.
And he's suing him for breach of fiduciary duty, seeking damages in like tens of millions of dollars. And Vex sent out a statement to TMZ. For several years, I've poured all of my energy and passion into building Bad Wolves. We've toured the world several times and charted 6 Billboard number one singles.
Really?
Oh, I'm not going to look it up. At this point, that doesn't mean as much as you think it does. We've covered that plenty of times. All the while, I've had to endure disparaging, manipulative, and at times racially charged misconduct from my former manager, Alan Kovac, and his record company, Better Noise Music. Alan has forced me out of my own band and is now attempting to slander and cancel me. After several failed attempts to settle amicably, I'm now forced to place this in the hands of the courts. And this is all in all caps when he posted this on social media. As artists, we can no longer remain silent about the censorship. Okay, I'm not going to do it anymore. As artists, we can no longer remain silent about the censorship and threat culture going on behind the scenes in the entertainment industry. Americans have a constitutional right to vote and voice is spelled wrong, and voice there is also spelled wrong, and voice their opinions. They should not have their livelihoods is also spelled wrong, destroyed by the oligarchy for disagreeing with their dictator script. Thank you to Malcolm McNeil, my legal team, blah, blah, blah. Thank you for the fans and other voices who continue to fight for the First Amendment. Thank you to my investors who read the evidence and demand that I see justice. We need to make the story go viral so the abuse of power ends. I implore you to repost, reshare, and tag is spelled wrong, as many as you can so the truth is no longer silenced. Hashtag Bad Wolves, hashtag Better Noise, etc., etc. And Alan Kovac responded very calmly, I am disappointed to see these accusations from Tommy against me, Tenshi Management, and Better Noise Music. They are categorically false. In 40 years in the music business, I have never made any derogatory racist comments, been accused of doing so, or been sued by an artist. Tommy Vext, a self-proclaimed QAnon supporter, has dragged us into a ridiculous, unfounded narrative that falsely paints him as a victim. Tommy quit Bad Wolves in January 2021 after being abusive to his band members, and he has since waged an all-out assault against the band and its members on social media. Behind the scenes, he and his team of lawyers have been trying to extort the band and the record company for a big payout. Because these tactics are not successful, He upped the ante and filed this bogus and spurious lawsuit to get leverage in contract negotiations. But the strategic ploy won't work. We will not be extorted and will defend and defeat these phony claims in court. As a management company and record label, we pride ourselves on working with artists from all different walks of life and encourage them to speak their minds creatively and authentically. I have never forced political beliefs or values on any of our artists or employees, but I will not tolerate when people create a hostile environment.
Well, the way that I'm reading this is that Tommy is going all in on a lawsuit. He doesn't have a lot of options left with what he and his former manager built with this band. And it seems like he's kind of spiraling. I would say spiraling is the right word to use here.
Well, spiraling is a good word because that's not the end of it. During an appearance at... Oh, no, this is old. Sorry. I found the FitCon thing that where he went on a rant. So that's old news.
He loves going on rants at fitness conventions, man. It's his favorite thing. Aside from beating women.
What else is he doing?
Tommy is doing so poorly mentally that he replied to like a trollish thing I put up online the other day.
You were doing so good at not trolling people for a while, and you just had to.
And I can't believe that somebody with this much fame and clout or whatever, it would go out of their way to respond to some dickhead like me. But apparently,
knowing what we know about the guy, it totally makes sense.
It does.
He's in the same group as Phil Labonte, just aggressive, angry man syndrome, lashing out at anyone who dares to question you or give you just the slightest amount of shit.
Like entire body covered in dick skin, just way too sensitive.
Just chafed raw.
This will keep going. I find it fascinating. I can't lie. I love looking at this shit. Every day is a new chapter in the Tommy Vex saga.
I mean, even Doc Coyle had to come out on his own podcast and respond to all the drama. It's very long, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but one of the big pull quotes is, "A big portion of the fan base has essentially been radicalized against the band under false pretenses."
I mean, what you've got right now is you've got Justin Timberlake leaving NSYNC. You know, the fans, they're being torn apart. People are team Tommy or team Bad Wolf, and it's really just going to explode on TRL this Friday.
I think the band is now seeing the drawbacks and problems that arise from buddying up to these sorts of people. These aggressive, spit yelling in your face about freedoms and hugging and kissing the cops and loving liberty is when that element goes away from your identity and your band, it's going to take some of them with you, and that blowback is going to hit you in the face.
Well, I agree with that assessment. I will say that it's interesting that that didn't stop them from pursuing it for a very long time.
This success and money, why not? It was working for them. You know, it's the same thing that works for Five Finger Death Punch.
Absolutely. Five Finger Death Punch has plenty of Phil towels in the band to massage everybody's back and make sure that they're drinking enough juice enough to get on stage for one more night together without blowing the fuck up at each other.
I think even in that situation with Ivan Moody and his problems and leaving the band and coming back, it wouldn't have had the same blowback as it is for Bad Wolves. Maybe it's because they're on a smaller level, or just this has been Tommy Vex's personality since the beginning and has really cultivated his own fan base within the band's fan base that he was able to like leech off them and now grift them for thousands of dollars for, well, it's not going to be a new album. It's probably going to be legal. Fees at this point.
Oh yeah, he was promising something like three albums the first time he did the GoFundMe that got several hundred thousand dollars. He's going to do more of these. I think he'll keep getting the money he needs to pay his legal fees, but ultimately this is not going to work for him.
Just keep selling cancel culture bad t-shirts with the little crying dog meme on it, but you know, his face on it.
Yeah. It's going to continue to spiral, and I am here for it.
It's just going to get louder and dumber and cool. Gives us something to talk about.
I love it. I personally love it.
It's all just so petty. And we've talked about other, especially older bands that go through the same stuff. How many LA Guns have there been? How many Great Whites and all these bands that no one really cares about at this point. And when he first left the band, I said, we're going to get like Tommy Vex Bad Wolves or Bad Wolves TV or something like that.
It's still likely to happen.
The baddest wolf.
The baddest. I love it. I love it.
There's two wolves in us. One is Tommy Vexed and the other is also Tommy Vexed.
So hopefully, you know, the conclusion of this trial will include the stipulation that, you know, Tommy can be the bad wolves with a Z. And then we can continue on and find the next industry creation that blows up in everyone's faces. I'm looking forward to that.
Give it a week. It'll probably happen.
So the good news is that we are at time, so I don't need to talk about the weird coyote situation with the Juggalo in Texas.
It's a teaser for next week.
Yeah, because this is going to get stranger as well.
We're not going to clarify if you mean a coyote, like the actual animal, or a person.
Yeah, no, that's a teaser. This one, it's interesting, but it's way less fun because it involves real people's lives being ruined and not Tommy Vexed. So we'll do that on another episode and then have something that's a bit of a fresh air around it. Let me just touch on something, though, a little fun little story before we get out of here, and it'll lead us into the music for this one, if that's okay.
Sure.
I was looking at Twitter yesterday. I follow Death Wish, the record company, you know?
Death Wish Inc.
Yeah. They posted new merch for sale, a pair of gym shorts that were like the hardest looking gym shorts I've ever seen. Like on the left side, there's a big scythe with a big flame coming off of it. Mm. And on the right side, it says, Greet Death. And I was like, fuck, that's hard. What band is this? So I typed in the band name or whatever. I found their band camp and I listened to it and I immediately sent it to you and Breno. I was like, fuck, listen to this.
I mean, it looks in like their album and their name seems like it would be a death metal band.
Absolutely. Like everything about this is knuckle dragging as shit in a very like, I want to say like 2010 way. Like it's the Death Wish vibe, right?
Yeah, that makes sense when you know some of their bands and it can fit in with that. That makes sense.
Yeah, but I pressed play on the second track, the one that's highlighted on their Bandcamp, and I was like, fuck! Because it's rare for me now, having, you know, I listen to music all the time. I know a million bands. It's rare for me to press play on something and just be immediately blown away.
Same.
So I sent that to you guys, and I think that I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like both of you were into it as well.
It was surprisingly nice. I didn't know what to expect, but this is something you could have easily heard on the radio when radio played new bands. I think I described it as vaguely Canadian.
Yes, it is vaguely Canadian. It is vaguely decades ago. At the same time, like it's modern in a way I can't describe. The production of it sounds like a $100 bill. It's great.
It's very clean, indie, like alt college rock that, at least for me, if I was listening to radio and flicking through stations, coming across some fading in and out college radio station where you really like the song and you hope the signal stays strong enough for the DJ to come on and tell you the band's name.
Absolutely. That's a great description of this. Very
and
much.
And if you can, you like pull to the side of the road to listen and you just wait.
And I will say that like I'm slow on this one. This one came out in I believe it's November of 2019. Yeah, which is, you know, an entire world ago. Judging by how many people have bought this on Bandcamp, it looks like several hundred people. Lots of people are on this tip. I was not on this tip. This is brand new to me. So I think it might be brand new to a lot of our listeners. If you've heard this before, you know, just get me hip to what's going on now.
We don't have our fingers on the pulse of indie rock.
I do not, but let's close out the show with a song called Do You Feel Nothing by the band Greet Death off their latest record from November 2019, New Hell. I dig this a lot. I hope you guys do too. I think that's it for us. Is there anything else you want to tell the people before we go?
Subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/toiletofhell. You can follow us on Twitter at Joe Thrash and Kill, at 365 Days of Hard. Don't follow Breno. No, I'm kidding. You can follow Breno as well at Breno Grounded. Is that what it is?
That's the one.
There you go. Like us on Facebook. We also have an active Instagram that I'm the one who runs it. So, you know, feel free to like that and, you know, send me pictures of your butt as well. And we'll see you next week.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.